coming Wednesday, April 14th, and Thursday, April 15th, Issues Etc. 24. It's a live 24-hour Bible study from 4 in the afternoon Central Time on April 14th through 4 in the afternoon Central on April 15th. Issues Etc. 24, Wednesday, April 14th, and Thursday, April 15th. Listen live at issuesetc.org.
How's that hopey changey thing working out for y'all now? Or my favorite, don't retreat, reload, and that is not a call for violence.
That, of course, is Sarah Palin, John McCain's running mate in the last presidential election, speaking this weekend at the Southern Republican Leadership Conference. We're going to talk about what happened there. Very interesting straw poll. Straw polls may or may not mean anything, but this one was so close, and the one who won it won by one vote, but wasn't even there. Joining us to talk about this weekend's Southern Republican Leadership Conference, Mark Hemingway, editorial page writer for the Washington Examiner. Mark, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me again.
Well, you go from honorable mention or maybe dishonorable mention on the set of 30 Rock by Alec Baldwin a couple months ago to, I guess, recently a quotation of one of your columns by Rush Limbaugh. You're practically a pop culture icon. What did Limbaugh have to say?
I was flattered. I mean, practically read the whole column on air. I did a 5-part series for my newspaper here in Washington about on a big undercover story, which is the influence of unions sort of as a special interest in the current White House administration and sort of all of the deals that they're getting. Suffice to say, it involves. It's complicated, but basically union pension plans are dramatically underfunded, and various congressmen and people in the administration are trying to make sure the unions put taxpayers on the hook to bail out their pension plans. It's already sort of happened in a few instances. The Delphi auto parts manufacturer went bankrupt last year, and the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation assumed $6.2 billion in liabilities, in taxpayer-funded liabilities, over and above the standard pension benefit guarantee.
I got to know real quick, because I talked to your wife about this about a month ago when I saw her in Chicago, and I got to know, who gets you more email, a mention on 30 Rock or a mention on Limbaugh?
that's a good question. They're two entirely different kinds of feedback. I'm much more likely to get your positive or negative constructive journalism feedback from Limbaugh, whereas I got a lot of phone calls from people I hadn't spoken to in years from the 30 Rock.
Okay, how do you explain the fact that the guy from Massachusetts, Mitt Romney, who didn't even show up for the Southern Republican Leadership Conference, wins the straw poll?
Yeah. Well, just because he didn't show up doesn't mean that he didn't want to have a good showing at the Southern Republican Leadership Conference. The SRLC is sort of being considered the unofficial kickoff of the Republican campaign season for 2012. And if you're seriously thinking about running, you would it's not necessary, but you certainly want to have a good showing. So there were evangelicals for Mitt Romney, I don't exactly know who's behind the organization, but they were sending out emails trying to organize people to go to the SRLC and vote for Romney back in January. So just because he wasn't there doesn't mean that he didn't have some sort of organizational tentacles out there trying to make sure that he put in a good showing.
And he beat out Ron Paul by only one vote, which means that this was a real squeaker, at least in terms of that straw poll. What is Paul's appeal?
Well, I think that there's always an appeal for a character like Paul, who is sort of an ideological purist. You look at Ron Paul's career, and it is pretty remarkable in one sense. Here's a guy that has been in Washington for a very long time and really hasn't compromised on many of his principles. At the same time, Paul's a little nutty about some things. No matter what he says about the gold standard, for instance, the United States is not going back to the gold standard, no matter how bad the inflation and deficit in this country get. That said, that doesn't mean that Paul isn't necessarily right about it. So, it's a weird sort of appeal. He doesn't have a broad appeal, but the people that are devoted to him are really, really devoted to him. And that's why you get, you know, all this little cult of personality around him that shows up at all these events and make sure that Paul's views are, you know, sort of represented in the party in sort of an outsized fashion. What I would say is interesting is that Paul's son, Rand Paul, is running for Senate in Kentucky, and he is sort of he has a lot of the same sort of principled appeal that his father does, but it's slightly more adept, slightly more in touch with political reality version of his father's principled sort of libertarian appeal. And it'll be real interesting to see how that Senate campaign goes and how his son finds his place in the party.
What's Ron Paul's future in the Republican Party?
Well, well, I think he's going to play the same role he always has. I mean, you know, certainly he's given a bigger platform since his run in 2008. You know, showed quite a lot of non-traditional Republican support. But you know, I think Ron Paul will be there as, you know, a curb for the GOP. You know, when they try and do things that are, you know, outrageous that the party of power does, and it looks like the Republicans are about to get some power back in November. The guys like Ron Paul will be there. You know, sort of, you know, standing on the sidelines, waving a finger at them if they try and do something that, you know, seems to be a gross, you know, exercise of power, you know, particularly when it comes to spending and the other issues that are sort of near and dear to Ron Paul's heart. And having that kind of voice on the sidelines, you know, to you know, make sure that to call them when call the party and members of Republican members of Congress to call on them and point out when they're not exhibiting the integrity that they should is probably a good thing. And then the fact that his influence has increased is probably a good thing.
Other than a place to take straw polls for prospective presidential candidates, what is the Southern Republican Leadership Conference all about?
Well, like I said, you know, it's an unusual beast. I think that you know, it's like I said, but primarily I think people are viewing it as a way, you know, as the unofficial kickoff of the next presidential campaign for Republicans, and that's sort of the, you know, the horse race aspect of it, certainly how the media is looking at it. But I think that this year it's taken on sort of an added, you know, dimension of both in terms of, you know, its organizational importance and as a matter of urgency, particularly because I think Republicans are worried about combating larger parts of Obama's agenda. So they sort of are relishing the opportunities to get together right now and, you know, make the kind of connections they need and sort of plot what their next move is going to be. So I think, you know, you could end up with a situation where, yeah, sure, whoever wins the straw poll or whatever is going to walk away from, you know, the conference, and that will be what all the news headlines are. But it's what's going on underneath the surface in terms of the, you know, the new resurgence of the GOP as Obama and the Democrats plummet in the polls, and what they're planning to do next to get back into power, and what they're going to do once they get back into power that could likely be, you know, the lasting effect of what's going on there. But, you know, it's one of these things where I'm not there, and we'll have to wait to get some more reports, you know, as time drags on, to see what comes out of it in that sense.
Let's just talk a little with strengths and weaknesses. We mentioned Paul before. What about the guy who won by one vote, Mitt Romney? What do you see as his strengths or weaknesses as a prospective front runner for the Republican Party?
Well, I mean, I think he's got a lot of strengths. You know, he's a likable guy. He's clearly he certainly gives off the aura of having, you know, a fair amount of principles as far as politicians go. You know, on a personal level, I should say, on a policy level, you know, certainly the accusations of flip flopping, you know, have stuck to him, and for, you know, some pretty legitimate reasons. That said, Romney got out pretty far on a limb in the last presidential election, trying to explain his prior decisions on stuff, and I don't think that people are going to quite be as turned off by the flip flop charge the second time around as they were the first. However, now that the White House is on several occasions, David Axelrod, the president's chief strategist, and I think even Obama himself has referenced the national healthcare plan that the Democrats just got through Congress as sort of a national version of the Massachusetts health plan that Romney put in place as a way of showing that it's moderate. You know, oh, well, of course, Mitt Romney, you know, supported it. Romney's going to have to find a way to pivot on that. He's going to have to find a way to say, you know, okay, well, maybe it didn't work out as intended, and clearly, you know, nobody's happy by, you know, the fact that I, you know, maybe created the template for this unholy beast that everybody is fighting now. And he's not just going to have to do that just because it's tainted by the association with Obama. He's going to have to do it simply because if you look at the program itself in Massachusetts that implemented, it's way, way over budget even just a few years out. I think it's, you know, already exceeding cost estimates by like $200 million a year. So it's a problem.
Steve is listening in his car. Steve, we're up on a break. Your question or your comment?
Yeah, my question is, I always find Republican politics interesting because you have the libertarian streak, and you see that with Ron Paul, who's, if you look at his foreign policy, it looks more like Barack Obama at times, get us out of Afghanistan, et cetera, but he's libertarian on many social issues, and then you have the more of the economic Republicans versus the social Republicans. How's that going to play out? Because I find that those two sides really don't like each other.
All right, about 30 seconds to begin a response to that, Mark.
Well, that is, you know, a definite fault line in the party. I think what's happening here, though, is I think that the social wing of the party is sort of making peace with, you know, the libertarian wing of the party simply because there's sort of actually even a left-right alliance. People are starting to realize that special interests and, you know, corporate or entities are controlling way too much of our politics, and that's a pretty good way to sort of thread the needle in terms of uniting both social conservatives and libertarians.
Yeah. Well, let's take a break, and I'll let you finish your thought there on the other side of the break. Mark Hemingway is our guest, editorial page writer for the Washington Examiner. We're talking about this weekend's Southern Republican Leadership Conference. More in his answer. Very insightful question on the part of Steve calling from his car on the other side of this break. We'll also talk about Sarah Palin, Newt Gingrich, who also showed well there at the conference, and what the Republicans should do about a future nomination for the Supreme Court from President Barack Obama.
Coming Wednesday, April 14th, and Thursday, April 15th, Issues Etc. 24. It's a live 24-hour Bible study from 4 in the afternoon Central Time on April 14th through 4 in the afternoon Central on April 15th. Issues Etc. 24, Wednesday, April 14th, and Thursday, April 15th. Listen live at issuesetc.org.
Issues Etc. regular guests Paul Meyer, Ron Rhodes, and Dick Fisher are coming to St. Louis. It's the St. Louis Conference on Biblical Discernment, April the 22nd through the 24th at Grace Baptist Church in St. Charles. This national conference is sponsored by Personal Freedom Outreach. For more information on the St. Louis Conference on Biblical Discernment, April the 22nd through the 24th, visit pfo.org or call 314-921-9800.
We love our on-demand listeners. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Saving Lives on Google.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
Two pro-life organizations are using the internet to help save unborn babies. CareNet and Heartbeat International are buying ad space from Google to promote their website called Option Line. When someone Googles the word abortion, Planned Parenthood is typically the first result to appear. But now, one of the sponsored sites placed above the search results is Option Line, which tells the searcher there are options other than abortion. Joy Crosby of CareNet said that the site is getting many visitors and that 60% of the calls they receive ultimately come from the Google ad.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List, inviting you to join us in our battle for life. For more, go online to sba-list.org.
The reason why the American people have awoken and they are so upset and annoyed and they're acting outside the party system is because the country is broke and the people in Washington won't admit it.
That's Ron Paul speaking this weekend at the Southern Republican Leadership Conference. We're talking about this conference and the future of the GOP with Mark Hemingway of the Washington Examiner. Our call-in number live this Monday afternoon, the 12th of April, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. You can email us right here in the studio in real time, talkback@issuesetc.org, or Twitter us at issuesetc. Before the break, Steve was on the line. You said, Mark, that he had rightly identified the fault line within the GOP, and you began your response by saying that the social conservatives are, in a sense, making peace with the libertarian wing there. What more?
Well, I just wanted to address sort of the foreign policy question. He's right that, you know, Ron Paul espouses a much more isolationist foreign policy than the Republicans that have traditionally espoused in the last couple of decades. That said, just because Ron Paul is more of an isolationist in foreign policy, I'm not sure he would, you know, embrace Obama's, you know, sort of internationalism either. You know, Obama's been making a lot of concessions to other countries. In the case of Russia, he's been, you know, trying to bully other countries. In the case of, you know, Israel, you know, and doing all this diplomatically. And I think the Ron Paul position would be to, you know, try and ensure as much free trade and economic freedom and otherwise stay out of international affairs lest it, you know, ensnare the U.S. into some, you know, larger conflict. And, you know, I don't think that we're ever going to see that kind of foreign policy adopted just because I think there are aspects of it that are, you know, naive to certain political realities. But that said, the economy is in quite a funk. People are not anxious to get into any more wars after what we've been through. And I think that, you know, if people aren't going to, you know, embrace the full bore isolationism of Ron Paul, I think people are willing to dial back on the foreign involvement, certainly. So, you know, in that sense, Paul might have some more influence as well.
All right, we talked about the strengths and weaknesses of Mitt Romney, who finished first, and then a very close second. We talked about the strengths and weaknesses of Ron Paul. Sarah Palin and Newt Gingrich kind of ran a slightly distant second together, third and fourth, if you will. There, talk about Palin's strengths and weaknesses.
Well, Palin's, you know, strengths are obvious. I mean, she has, you know, nobody in the Republican Party, you know, touches off as much of a reaction for good or for ill as she does. And she just seems to have a real, you know, natural touch and charisma. There's something about her that people just, you know, absolutely reflexively respond to. The negative of Sarah Palin is that I am pretty sure that there will be political reporters and editorial writers in this country that will throw themselves off of buildings before they allow her to become president. I mean, the whatever, you know, establishment there is in this country in terms of, you know, people that set, you know, elite, you know, opinion makers or, you know, and across a lot of different realms, you know, be it in academia, be it in journalism or whatever, have just decided that she is, you know, effectively the Antichrist, and they are going to stop her at any cost. And it's a really, really bizarre phenomenon to witness because so much of it is just, you know, purely irrational. But, I mean, it's a real problem for her.
And Newt Gingrich, a blast from the past?
Gingrich is a brilliant policy guy. He really is. I mean, he has a lot to offer the party in terms of, you know, ideas and, you know, fresh, you know, starts and things like that. But I don't know. He carries with it a lot of baggage. He hasn't held elective office in a long, long time. And I think he's the kind of guy that's just better off given the role of sort of a, you know, consigliere or whatever in the party, you know, as an elder statesman, an advisor, a guy that sets an agenda rather than, you know, the guy that is actually the one out there, you know, implementing it. So, you know, I don't know about I don't know about Gingrich in that sense. Now, if you're talking about smart policy minds who I think could potentially be viable candidates, one of the dark horse candidates that's being thrown about a bit is Mitch Daniels, who's the governor of Indiana. I mean, he's probably the best governor in America. I mean, he's done wonders for that state in terms of, you know, having some pretty innovative policy solutions for everything from their huge transportation deficit they had in the state, where he leased out the toll road for billions of dollars to a European company to cover the state's expenditures, to he actually instituted health care reform in the state, where he put state workers on a high deductible plan with a health savings account, and like 70 or 80% of the state workers willingly chose it, and health care costs in the state were going down dramatically as a result. I mean, he's got a lot of things, you know, the same sort of smart policy acumen that Gingrich is known for, but at the same time, is he's got a viable resume as a guy recently holding an important elected office. So, you know, you could see him either as a dark horse presidential candidate, or maybe even a top tier contender for vice president.
How closely aligned is the Tea Party movement with the GOP?
You know, they really are two different things. I mean, you know, clearly people who are part of the Tea Party are more sympathetic to the GOP than they are the Democratic Party. But if you look at the polling, or what polling that's been done on the Tea Party, and you find something like, you know, pretty, you know, there's even a, you know, a not insignificant chunk of the Tea Partiers that are Democrats. So I think it would be a big mistake to conflate sort of a Tea Party agenda with a Republican Party agenda. You know, the Tea Party is, you know, looking to influence, push the Republicans in a more principled direction, because, you know, if you saw what happened last time Republicans were brought to power in 1994, you know, within about 10 years or so, all that unraveled, you know, with Tom DeLay and Jack Abramoff and people that really just weren't principled like they should have been, and it just frankly destroyed the party. So, you know, the idea again of, you know, sort of playing a similar role to Ron Paul, but on a grander scale of, you know, being this outside entity that, you know, is committed to principle rather than the party itself, you know, I think is generally a force for good in, as far as the Republican Party is concerned.
What should our elected officials in the GOP, namely senators for the most part here now, do? Because now an Obama a nomination to the U.S. Supreme Court is inevitable. It will happen. What should they do? Should they fight? What's the conventional wisdom that you're hearing there?
Well, it's tough to say, because it all depends on who the candidate's going to be. The problem here is Democrats particularly have a real pickle. I mean, they exhausted like every bit of free time they had in the Senate last year dealing with the health care bill, and meanwhile the economy was going down the tubes, and they didn't really devote any time or resources in the Senate to at least, you know, appearing to care or deal with it, particularly because the stimulus bill has turned out to be a big bust in the eyes of the public. So they now have moved away from Obamacare, and everybody was breathing this sigh of relief, you know, because they could then concentrate on other priorities, particularly the economy. Well, you know, guess what? This, you know, Supreme Court thing just popped up, and, you know, to be fair, you know, they may not be helped. I mean, Stevens is 90 years old. So they have to figure out how to get someone shepherded onto the Supreme Court that won't suck up all of their time and won't turn into this bitter, knockdown, partisan, drag-out fight, you know, right before the November elections, where they look like they're going to get creamed anyway. So, you know, if it looks like things are just ugly on the Hill, the anti-incumbent sentiment is just going to run amok, and Democrats are going to lose even more seats. So I think that they have to pick someone who's fairly mainstreamed or looks like they can get through the Senate without too much trouble. I think someone who's probably even, you know, more mainstream than the last candidate, Sotomayor, that Obama put on last year. Hillary Clinton would have sort of been the perfect solution to that. That was her name was being thrown about in Washington for the last few days, ever since Stevens stepping down became public. She, you know, is a Yale-educated lawyer, seems adaptable to a variety of institutions and politically, and was, you know, very well liked by her former colleagues in the Senate, even Republicans. You know, it doesn't mean they'd necessarily vote for her with her baggage, but they probably wouldn't have filibustered her nomination. But, you know, Obama came out today and squelched the talk of Hillary personally, and I'm frankly not sure Hillary wanted the job. She may still have some ambitions and to higher office, and you know, if Obama's in a, you know, 30% range with high unemployment, you know, a couple years from now, you may see a Hillary primary challenge or something. But someone like that, you know, someone who's got to have, you know, enough gravitas, or, you know, is seen as mainstream enough, they can get through the Senate in a quick and sort of orderly fashion as far as these things go. I do not know who that's going to be, but if they're smart, that's what they'll try and find.
So with only about 15 seconds, it sounds like you see President Obama's eventual nomination for the vacancy there as more of a potential danger for Senate Democrats than for Republicans at all.
Yeah, I mean, if it turns out into a bitter fight, I mean, people are just going to watch this and say, look, this is what we don't like about Washington. And, you know, in that case, the incumbent party is going to suffer. The majority party is going to suffer. I think they have to be careful about what they do and make sure it's not someone too controversial.
Mark Hemingway is editorial page writer for the Washington Examiner. You can read his columns under the Listen On Demand page at issuesetc.org. Mark, keep up the good work, and thanks for being our guest.
Hey, thanks for having me. Anytime.
I want to hear from you, especially on our Issues Etc. comment line. That's exactly where I want to hear from you. Your answer to the question, why do you listen to Issues Etc.? We're getting ready on Wednesday to kick off Issues Etc. 24. That's 24 hours of live Issues Etc. Bible study from Wednesday at 4 o'clock on the 14th of April until Thursday at 4 o'clock on the 15th of April, all through the night and the wee hours of the morning. We'll be broadcasting live Issues Etc. 24, and we want to be able to hear from you why you listen to Issues Etc. The best way to leave your answer to that question is at the comment line, 618-223-8384. You can call at your convenience anytime because it's always open, 618-223-8384. Leave your answer to the question, why do you listen to Issues Etc.? 618-223-8384. When we come back, Dr. Jennifer Roback Morris will be with us for the last 10 minutes. We're going to talk about fatherhood and the shifting definition of parenthood. We'll be right back.
Think big screens belong in the movie theater, not at church? Think garage bands should stay in the garage, not be jamming in front of the altar? Hey, we do too. Come join us at St. Paul Lutheran Church of Hamel, Illinois, for services that are reverent and relevant, vibrant and traditional. Divine service on Saturday at 6 p.m., on Sunday morning at 7:45 and 10, with Sunday school and Bible class in between at 9. Join us. Not a big screen or garage band in sight. Promise.
Will your church be one of the Issues Etc. 300? Hi, this is Todd Wilkin. We're looking for 300 congregations to pledge $1,000 to Issues Etc. in their budgets. To find out more about the Issues Etc. 300, click the support page of our website, issuesetc.org. You'll even find a one-page informational flyer. Please consider including Issues Etc. in your church's mission or advertising budget. The Issues Etc. 300.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Would you like to share something you've heard on Issues Etc. via email, Facebook, Twitter, or text message? We've made it easy for you. Just go to the Listen On Demand page of our website, issuesetc.org, and click Share This. You'll find almost 50 ways to share Issues Etc. audio. We love our on-demand listeners. Old Theology, New Technology, issuesetc.org. Go to the Listen On Demand page and click Share This.
Here are two new ways to stay connected to Issues Etc., Facebook and Twitter. You'll find photos of in-studio guests at facebook.com/issuesetc, and you'll find a list of upcoming topics and guests on Twitter at issuesetc. Social networking for the thinking Christian, facebook.com/issuesetc, and on Twitter at issuesetc. Connect with fellow Issues Etc. junkies today, facebook.com/issuesetc, and on Twitter at issuesetc.